lot of ideas. First thing is to get home.
Your daughters return as teenagers.
Yeah, 14, yes, absolutely. So, yeah, and you know, Haiti has been present in their lives, notwithstanding the distance, for 7 years. So, but still, you know, they've been out of the country for half their lives. So it'll be a big adjustment.
The pilot has just said we will be landing in a few minutes. That means we will be landing in Haiti.
That's right. We'll be landing in Haiti. So. You know, Selma James, one last thing, the widow of C.L.R. James, who wrote The Black Jacobins, who we've been in communication with in the last month or so, and she will be in Haiti. And she wrote to me and she said, we're about to step on ground made hallowed by the Haitian Revolution and all of the progressive movements by the Haitian people.
Former Haitian First Lady Mildred Aristide, just before landing in Haiti on that historic flight that ended the Aristide's 7 years in exile. Special thanks to K.K. Keene, Nicole Salazar, Sharifa Bokadous, Hani Massoud, and John Hamilton. To see Democracy Now!'s exclusive coverage of the Aristide's epic return to Haiti, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Ramin Shaikh, Steve Martinez. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, I'm Tevin with WUSB Concert Billboard for Monday, March 21st. First, we have Noah and the Whale at 8 p.m. in the Bowery Ballroom, Manhattan, New York. Then next, we have Dusty Brown at 10 p.m. at Rockwood Music Hall, Manhattan, New York. After that is Rock Your Face Case with Hotel of the Laughing Tree, The Republic of Wolves, Gabriel the Marine, and Neighbors. And from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. in a university cafe at Stony Brook University, New York. Finally, we have open mic night, 8 p.m. in the Velvet Lounge at East Setauket.
Hi, I'm Justine with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, March 22nd. Elephant 6 at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn, New York. British Sea Power at 8 p.m. at the Music Hall of Williamsburg in Brooklyn. And Noah and the Whale, 8 p.m. in the Bowery Ballroom in Manhattan.
Your WUSB Concert Billboard for Wednesday, March 23rd. Elephant 6, Le Poisson Rouge in Manhattan, New York. Commander Cody and Chaz DiPaolo, 7 p.m. B.B. King's, Manhattan, New York. And Robert Brewey, 7 p.m. Ruvo West Restaurant and Bar.
And that's your Concert Billboard for this week. And keep listening to WUSB to find out where your favorite bands are playing in the area and who's coming to your favorite night spot. Or look online at WUSB.fm for the online version of Concert Billboard at WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldskin here with you, joined by Kyle.
Hello, hello. Good evening.
It's an abbreviated show tonight, so we have to talk quicker.
Yes, very fast.
Come in faster and make our points more definitively.
I agree.
It's also a fundraising show.
Yes, we're raising a lot of money.
We hope to. We really hope to. And the thing is, there's a lacrosse game coming up at 6:45.
Quarter till.
Involves Stony Brook and Cornell, and apparently some kind of bitter rivalry going on there.
Absolutely, it'll be
we're
riveting.
We're just going to clear out of here before that gets too...
yes, we sure will.
Yeah, too serious. But here's the thing. We don't have anybody else here in the studio. It's just Kyle and myself. So if somebody calls in with a pledge, one of us is going to have to go and take the phone call. So that's something. Tell your friends, because it could really mess up the show big time, because one of us will have to leave. And what we're going to do, just to make this extra fun, Kyle, we're going to alternate. Yeah, we're going to alternate. That means that if somebody calls in and makes a pledge, you'll run outside.
Uh-huh.
Not outside, but you know, out in the newsroom.
Right.
And take the information. And then if somebody else calls, you'll stay here and I'll run outside and get the information. And you've never been left alone in a radio studio before, for very good reason. If you guys read the newspapers out in Seattle.
No. That's not right. You left me in here once, I think. And I didn't... Well, I sort of held my own, but
yeah.
Not very well. Well,
you might be holding your own for a while, especially if I have trouble writing down, you know, someone's information or something like that. And then I don't even know what's going to happen if two phones ring at the same time. That's going to be interesting.
That could be chaos. So we're making this a bit of a game.
A bit of torture for us, but that's what fundraisers are, so we might as well go whole hog and really plunge the dagger in. But we'll be giving out details in just a couple of minutes. We should update people on various things that have been going on. First and foremost, our lives. More important than anything going on in the world. Nuclear disaster, bombings and revolutions and pestilence and all that kind of thing. But, man, we have been... last week, we talked about not having the heat. Remember? We had to survive without heat for a couple of days. We talked about hardship and how it's good to experience these hardships. Well, somebody must have heard me because, what was it, Thursday night... I heard this rattling noise. It turned out it was the water pump. I have well water. That means water coming from well way down in the ground somewhere, coming up into your house. Nobody knows how it works, but it just does.
Well, most water comes from the ground.
It comes from the sky, but it actually comes from the ground.
Right. It's just not provided by a municipal well.
No.
You have your very own well.
Okay.
Anyway, continue.
Or water towers out here. I don't know if you see these things, these big towers.
Right.
With crosses on the roofs and things like that. A lot of people go into them on Sundays, but they're actually water towers. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
I might have that mixed up with something else.
Yeah, I think you've got to...
There's also these big temples that are made out of concrete and are kind of round, and some of them are up on stilts. And I think those are some kind of religion or something. But that's how we get our water.
Well, most municipalities pump it from the ground, and they put it in a large tower and distribute it to the community. But some people have their very own well.
My municipality is my home, and that pumps it from the ground. But the problem was the pump decided to stop doing that. It started making a clicking. Well, actually, the pump was making a clicking noise. Some kind of relay was doing that.
Yes.
And the reason for that was because the pump had finally decided after a couple of decades that it had enough.
Gave up the ghost.
Yeah, and the pump is about 4 feet underground. Basically, we had to get some people who do this kind of thing to come out and dig up the pump and replace it. Well, it wasn't quite as easy as that because they didn't know where it was. And they spent the better part of Friday just... Friday they think they found out where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this little metal detector thing, and that's how you find the water pump. You look for the metal.
They found a lot of metal.
They found a lot of metal, but this particular one, they dug 4 feet in the ground and hit something, and it was, in fact, a water pump. But it was Friday, and they couldn't do it Friday, so they had to come back Monday. So we had to go the whole weekend without water, and boy, that was... Mm-hmm. That was something. That was it was hard. We're very shaggy right now because we've haven't had the ability to wash or shave or any of that kind of thing. We have done similar things in various places, but you have to go into public restrooms and things like that. It's not very pleasant.
We got pretty creative, and
we
were busy
hard
working.
This weekend.
Yeah.
This weekend we were doing all kinds of things at the 2600 warehouse, and that was a lot of fun. So the time just flew by, but it was a hardship. Then Monday
we used
came
the
along.
Opportunity to get extra dirt.
Exactly. Yes. Really get the grime soaked in there.
Yeah. Get in touch with that.
Monday comes around, and the well people come back to finish the job, except they cannot find the pump. They thought they found it the first time. It turned out it was an old pump. And they're going all over the place with this little metal detector, finding things that are beeping, digging them up, finding out it's not that. eventually they just give up and say, you know, we can't find this thing. It's probably made out of plastic, and that's why we can't find it. The only way to find it is to send a tone down the line, sort of like when you're trying to find a phone line.
Yes.
Except they're trying to find the water line here.
They put it through the power lines because you have to power the pump when it's out, wherever it's buried, and then they send a tone out, and then they can use another device that looks for that tone.
And they eventually found it, and they came back today with that bit of equipment and spent the entire day digging it up. And then what happened was the pump fell into the well 80 feet down, and they had to get it out of there somehow. So it was all kinds of fun. We only just got water back a little while ago. We've been sort of just throwing it around and skipping and
splashing it everywhere.
It was so much fun. But we talk about hardship. Try going without water for 5 days. This is the fifth day without water.
It's amazing, though. You adapt. You find ways around it.
Bottled water.
Yeah, bottled water.
That's one great way.
It's amazing how much water you end up using, like just to wash your hands or just to cook something. It's uncanny. Or to use the restroom or
take a bath.
Or washing your clothing. And it's a vital, vital resource. Mm-hmm. So,
don't take it lightly.
Yeah, so please don't take it for granted.
Important thing. So, that's the fun of not having city water. Sometimes that can go out. But hopefully this won't go out for another 20 years.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You're all set.
So, okay, we've had an electric problem over the summer after Hope. Remember that?
Yeah, no power.
No power.
Yeah.
We've had all kinds of internet outages.
Yeah, the telecommunications.
We've had heat problems, and now we've had water problems. I think we've run through everything. Is there anything left?
Oh, there was a leak, a plumbing problem.
That's true. We had
a leak.
We had an excess of some things, too. We had water coming in, and that was a lot of fun to get that fixed before it flooded everything. It's a trying time. It's a trying time. So we understand. We understand how people feel when they're running away from nuclear power plants that are on fire or bombs being dropped on them from airplanes and things like that. We're with you because we've experienced the hardship ourselves and we know something about that.
Yeah, we know suffering.
We do. We do. We somehow seem to attract it. But let's get right to it.
Yes, please. Let's discuss this.
What do you think I'm going to discuss?
Well,
there are all kinds of things I could discuss, but
I think the main event has been the United States military leading the way in the fine country of Libya. They've answered the call from the Libyan people who want liberation, and we've provided special deliveries for them. We've been dropping care packages.
Yeah, care packages that explode. But I'm curious about this because that's what I've been hearing, that we're answering the call for freedom. But how does that call come exactly, and who gets to make that call?
It might have been a text.
Whatever it was.
Okay.
I'm looking at stories here, okay? This is from Syria. Officers fire on crowd as Syrian protests grow. Protesters set fire to the ruling Ba'ath Party's headquarters and other government buildings in the southern city of Daraa on Sunday as protesters rallied and clashed with the police for a third straight day. Police fired live ammunition into the crowds, killing a bunch of people, wounding a bunch of people, and you know, that to me sounds like a cry for freedom as well. How come we're not bombing Syria? Why? You know, I'm not defending Gaddafi or anything like that. I just want to know what the rules are. I don't understand the rules. What is it about Libya that's special that gets the whole world to start bombing them because they're attacking the people that are protesting the government? I just want to know the rules.
Well, they've been taking cities. They've been working for like at least the past 3 weeks or maybe even a month or more. I've been following it so closely in the present, I haven't really looked at the history, but basically the killing of civilians and whatnot has been going on for quite some time now, and it's sort of been an issue where, like, Gaddafi's regime was sort of able to respond back, and they're starting to take back cities that opponents and rebels had secured. So basically, we don't want the balance to fall back into Gaddafi's. We want the revolution and the movement, all the cities that people have taken out of their revolution and uprising, we want them to be able to keep that and continue forward,
but you know what?
Not move back because Gaddafi is brutal.
I know we don't want... I don't want the Mets to have another losing season, but I know it's going to happen. We can't always get what we want. Gaddafi is somebody that is in power that people in the United States didn't like, but it's another country. And sometimes things like that happen where you have leaders like Castro or Kim Jong-il that you don't like but are in power anyway.
Well, and that's the premise of how this started, is that it was nations who were looking down upon this treatment of an uprising, right? And he was, you know, early on, like weeks ago, we had Libyan planes that landed in Malta, right?
From the Air Force that defected.
They defected. Why? Because they knew that Gaddafi would use his air supremacy. And let me tell you, in war and in combat, air supremacy is the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so they knew Gaddafi would go in there and use his aircraft to do bad stuff. And so they left. They dipped out. They're like, nah, I'm not going to play this. And and that continued for weeks. And that's and I think what the international community thought they were going to do, I think people that supported intervention thought that what was going to happen is there would be a no-fly zone enforced. And that's where I think the gray area has arisen. What is a no-fly zone, and how do you make that work?
I don't get this. How do you impose a no-fly zone on someone else's country? I mean, again, this is not a defense of a dictator, but there are so many dictators. Look at this in Yemen. You got President Ali Abdullah Saleh. He's been president for 30 years. We don't even talk about him. Friday, 50 protesters shot dead at a demonstration in the capital. Okay, where's the no-fly zone there? Where's the NATO or UN bombings of that country? Where these people want freedom just as much as people in Libya. I just want to know the rules. I want to know what it is that we use as a barometer to tell us, okay, this is the country we're going to go after. This is the one we're going to support these people. What kind of message does it send to any demonstration? Any group of demonstrators anywhere that the rest of the world is going to be watching their backs, no matter what happens to them. I don't know. It breaks my heart to see people quelled when they're trying to get change in their lives. But really, in the end, it's up to those people. It's up to the people in a country to overthrow the government in that country, not outside forces. And unfortunately, many times they're just not strong enough to do that. But I think we've learned over the decades that when people power reaches critical mass, anything is possible. You can take down the entire Iron Curtain. And as long as you get the military on your side, which is always possible, victory is something that is at least in theory something that could happen. I don't know.
Well,
just,
I think
it bugs me.
The rule was that, you know, Solawi, how do you pronounce his name?
I pronounce it, I have to say it all at once, otherwise it doesn't come out right. Ali Abdullah Saleh.
Saleh.
Saleh. Okay, I guess I could say Saleh then, yes.
Pardon me.
I could be wrong, though, so don't quote me.
In any event, he's quiet, you know, he's like...
He's quiet, what, he's not uppity, he doesn't speak up and
exactly.
Berate the United States?
Yeah. See, Gaddafi, like, he's
like
a
Hugo
character.
Chavez?
He's a character, he's a charismatic leader, he gets the sunglasses and, like, pumps his fist and throws the parties and all of that with, like, people with the signs and holding up their firstborn children, you know, celebrating him and, you know, showing him their children and how happy their little kids are that they're in power and... Yeah, I mean, we see all of that, and then the U.S., you know, we don't like that.
So
we don't like tough guys if it's not us.
So if they talk back,
yeah,
then they're going to get it when the people stand up against them.
Okay, so imagine you're pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
The police officer is writing you a ticket. If you don't say yes, sir, no, sir, you know, you talk back, you're a wiseacre, he's going to ask you to step out of the car.
So we are the cops of the world. We are the cops.
Yeah.
Oh.
You didn't know?
Now I know the rules. Okay, no, I wanted some affirmation of that.
Okay, I thought you were
okay, so
with
we're
this.
The cops, and the Gaddafis and the Salehs, I can't say unless I say his whole name, Ali Abdullah Saleh, or the all the other leaders over there, they're all speeding. and we're pulling them over.
Right, but it's not necessarily our nation so much as the people that control our nation, which could very well be from other countries.
And it's not just our nation. It was the UN in this case. France was the first country to start bombing.
Think of us as like the muscle. We're the muscle, and we act in order to like maintain that that muscle and like our leverage and our interests. And our interests are sort of global and transnational. And so there are people that leverage that muscle politically and economically, whether they're outside the country or within the country. And so we all of a sudden, we have various interests that us, the people of the U.S., don't necessarily, we don't really understand those interests, but our nation has those interests. And then we act in favor of those interests or on their behalf. Because we have the technology and the guns and the planes and all the
And it just seems like we're sort of elevating ourselves to a level that's so much more superior than all those other people down there on the ground that need our help. I mean, imagine if back in the 1800s during the Civil War, a bunch of fighter planes from say Russia and France and England came over and started bombing everybody that was on what they considered to be the wrong side. We'd be happy. Well, of course, we'd be a bit mystified wondering what all these planes were because it's the 1800s after all. But if we got over that, we'd be happy that we're getting help. But would that have been the right way for that conflict to have ended, to have all this outside help? And maybe those guys, once they got back in their time machines or whatever, would want something in return for helping us out, or maybe just feel like we owed them. I think that's unhealthy.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I
see that you don't.
I think that you have we influence people. We influence the way things go, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not organic. It's not the way that it ought to go. And I think that way, the way you're talking about, there's a lot of bloodshed. Mm-hmm. And it is the way it ought to go for it to be sustainable. It's very organic. Like if people rise up and they take charge and there is an intervention, because the intervention sort of leaves people looking for outside help. It's a crutch almost.
Exactly.
I think transnationals and I think people that have controlling interests economically or politically, I don't think they have the time. You know, they want to go on vacation. They have dividends to collect on. They need to continue to conquer or do whatever they're doing as far as capital goes. So they don't have time to sit around and wait for organic stuff to happen in these countries. They need the deals cut now. Mm-hmm. They need it done so that they can go on and get their election, get their whatever they're doing in their home country and whatever interests they serve, whatever board meetings they have. They got to collect, they got to cash, you know, clear checks and do what they do in the world. Right. They don't have time to sit around and wait for some organic revolution, but they have the power to make it happen right now and then be out of it so quick people wondered why it happened. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at now. It's over now. I mean, right? They're practically, you know.
Well, that's what I don't understand. What is the end goal here? To drive Gaddafi from power, to divide the country in two?
Well, now we want NATO to take over. And we don't even know who's in charge of the Americans there. So
yeah, it's
like, we don't know where Obama stands and like where who's in charge
Obama
of the Americans.
Obama doesn't know where Obama
but
stands.
He wants NATO to go in there and like take charge. So.
Times like this, you wish there was some kind of alien race just watching over all of us that would just lead us in the right direction. We wouldn't have to
do all this. We predicted the future there. Uh-huh. We predicted it will go this way. Why? Because we made it go that way. So we're fortune tellers.
Anyway, that's what's going on. Now we're bombing Libya. Three different countries. Well, I guess we're not really involved in Iraq anymore. There's still people on the ground there. But Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya. And I guess occasionally we have little journeys into Pakistan. But who's next? And, you know, just wait. There's going to be some kind of pro-democracy demonstration or just some kind of demonstration that people are going to say, where's the world? Why aren't they backing us up? And it's going to be this expectation that every time something happens, and then there's going to be different sides. One side will say, no, we're better than these guys. Support us instead. And there's going to be all kinds of competitions for the to bomb the target of
but
your choice.
That is our business. There's not one state in this country that doesn't have government contractors doing business.
That's true.
That is what we do as a country. I told you, we are the muscle. Okay? So that's great for our economy. That's great for business. And it will continue ad nauseum infinity, whatever the Latin is for in ad infinum.
In ad finitum? Forever. Is that what it is? Ad nauseum?
This is the way it is. You can't do anything about it. And so go to a big box grocery store and buy lots of stuff.
Okay. All right. Now I finally have an answer.
Yeah.
What I need to do. All right. Well, now we have to tell the folks what we think they should do, what would help this radio station out. Yes, it's time for the spring fundraiser. You know, I know people are groaning, rolling their eyes up into the back of your head. Don't do that. It's really dangerous for you. It's not good. And basically saying, I can't believe they're doing it yet again. Let me tell you something. We are not in charge of the seasons. Blame your God for that. Blame the planetary alignments for that. Blame whatever you feel like blaming. Just don't blame us. We're not the ones that made it spring right now. None of us are happy about it being spring. We all want it to be winter for forever. It was a great winter. A lot of snow, a lot of ice, a lot of coldness, a lot of misery. But it's spring now. Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. It's just a reality. And because it's spring, that's why we have to pay the spring access fee, I think, or whatever it is that we have to pay. It's all kinds of bills and all kinds of things that once a year we have the spring fundraiser. Actually, once a year we have the fall fundraiser. So we have two fundraisers per year, but this is the spring one.
They're distinct and different.
They are very different. But this is our first show in the spring fundraiser. And we do need to get off to a good start. And we have an abbreviated show tonight, and we also have no support staff inside because of the lacrosse game. It's unfair. I don't want to say because of the lacrosse game, people run away from the radio station. That's not what's happening. The fact is that usually Finn is here, and he does a show at 7 o'clock. But since Finn isn't on tonight at 7 o'clock, why should he come all the way out here just to answer phones for us? That's not fair.
No, there's no expectation.
I mean, he could do it. If he was a really nice guy, maybe he'd do that.
He is really nice.
He is a nice guy, but he could be a nicer guy by coming out here just to answer phones for us. Phones that maybe won't even ring at all. You know, having that vote of confidence.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe even going into the other room, calling himself, running back in, answering, and pretending it's a call, and actually making a pledge to our show at the same time. That's the kind of thing people do at this radio station.
That's awesome.
It really is. It really is.
So if I wanted to call in, say, right now,
you would have to call. Well, actually, from the phone in there, you wouldn't dial all these numbers. So I'm going to give you some extra numbers out for people to call in. Area code 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. That makes our phone ring. Now, of course, if you were out there, you'd only have to dial the last five digits.
Right.
And if you're on Long Island, you just have to, well, in 631 area code, you don't have to dial the 631. In fact, you're not supposed to dial the 631. But regardless, you know how to dial a phone. I don't have to give instructions on that. Our phone number is 631-632-9872, but there's only two of us here, so...
So wait, if I was on campus, it would be 29872.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Okay. You're a quick learner.
Well, there's a lot of people on campus. They might...
Or in the hospital. People in the hospital.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they have a different exchange over there. They have the 444 exchange, but you can dial 2, followed by... Yeah. That's how it works, internal systems.
Okay.
But here's what we have tonight. We have all kinds of WUSB paraphernalia. We have the WUSB knit cap or the WUSB scarf. These are real items. I see them being worn all the time, and maybe not as much now that it's spring, but they're always good to have. That's for a pledge of only $25. For a pledge of $35, we have the WUSB travel coffee mug. That's the kind you can bring with you in the car. And I think you can even drop it and it doesn't break. Or the WUSB ceramic mug, that does break if you drop it, I think. If you drop it onto a hard surface. So you can drop it onto a linoleum or a rug, it'll just spill. We can't stop that from happening. We'd like to, but if you have coffee in the ceramic mug and you drop it, it's going to spill. That's just the way it is. We have, get this, a WUSB military cap. Why do we have a WUSB military cap? What is a military cap? Is it like one of those...
sort of like a fishing hat, but more like a field hat. Keeps the sun off your eyes.
It's like one of those all the way around, green beret things. Well, they don't have pictures of them here.
That would be cool if it was a beret. But no, I think it's with a rim all the way around, sort of crushable. You can use it camping and stuff.
Okay. All right. Well, you can do that then. Or the WUSB baseball cap. All of those for pledges of $35. Not all of them, but you know, you take your choice. Travel coffee mug, ceramic mug, military cap, or baseball cap for a pledge of $35. 631-632-9872. We have the knit cap and the scarf for $25. Now, let's get into shirts. We have the WUSB T-shirt with our own unique design, which I see people wearing all the time, and it looks really cool. And you could be one of the people wearing the new WUSB T-shirt for a pledge of $50. We have sweatshirts, too, with our own unique logo on them for a pledge of $75. All different sizes, too. 631-632-9872. And if the phone rings, Kyle's going to run into the other room and pick up the phone and take the pledge. And you've never done that before, have you?
Never in my life.
Wow. So this could be, you could be making an exciting, if you've never pledged before, you could be doing that for the first time. Kyle could be answering the phone for the first time, and it'll be pretty amazing. It just takes one. It just takes one to make it happen. 631-632-9872. What do you think, Kyle? Can you get that call to come in? Sometimes it's the voice of somebody.
Does the shirt have a new design? What kind of design are we? Is it a nice USB?
Yes, it's
screen
print. It's a great design. That's all I can tell you.
With the logo and the frequency and I don't know. I don't know. It could be a good gift for somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you yourself shirts, aren't going to wear the shirt or
shirts are great,
sweatshirt.
Great gifts as our sweatshirts, as our mugs, as our hats, all kinds of cool things like that.
I imagine the logos on all of this stuff.
You could join, get this, you can join the 90.1 Club. That's pledging $90.01. And by doing that, you get a whole bunch of things. You get two items from above. You get, you got to figure this out. It's a bit of a chart there, but you get more stuff. You get a lot more stuff. 631-632-9872. Well, okay, here's the thing. Why?
You get a t-shirt or sweatshirt plus a tote.
Yeah.
And two other items from above.
Yeah, and Kyle will discuss that with you at length on the phone. But here's the thing. We need to get at least two calls if we want to put Kyle on the air unescorted. Have me go out and pick up the next pledge. So we have to have somebody call in with the first pledge. And
I got to say, I'm a little nervous. I mean, I don't want to discourage people from calling.
I'd be very nervous for you.
But I'm a little nervous about that because I've only done that one other time, and it was a little nerve-wracking. I'm a little flustered now just with the whole fundraising thing here. I mean, I really hope people call in because it's a good station. We really like to see...
good station, Kyle? Just a good station?
It's a fantastic station.
It's a great station. It's an amazing station. It's a station where you can do almost anything, and the diversity is just simply staggering.
Yeah, and there's young people coming in all the time. And for a place like this to give access to people that want to learn how to broadcast, want to learn how it works, how audio production works.
That's what I did. Walked in and was taught all these things, and I never left. Well, I left, but I came back. You always come back. You can't leave. When you're part of this family, you're in it for life.
Well, I think it served you. I think you've done amazing things as a result of your experience on air.
Well, thank you. But thank the radio station because they're the ones that really gave me a good kick in the right direction.
Yeah. And you've been able to create excellent programs. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of other programs on this station that people really love. So,
All kinds of music. We have blues, we have reggae, we have folk music, we have classical, we have rock, alternative, all kinds of things. You name it, it's here someplace. There's somebody who has devoted their life to this particular genre and is educated, can teach other people various things. Just the other day on St. Patrick's Day, we were listening to Chris LaPorta, Marianne Devine talking about Ireland, playing amazing music. And it was just so cool driving around. We were actually making... Irish food that night was kind of cool.
Yes,
we had
beef and cabbage for St. Patrick's.
We had Guinness. We had all kinds of Irishy things.
Soda bread.
And just listening to the radio at that point, hearing people talking about things, talking about what it's like overseas, and just the culture here as well. That is the kind of thing that really adds to life, makes things a lot more enjoyable. And without a station like WUSB, you'd be stuck with commercial radio. You'd be stuck with just NPR. NPR is fine, and I know they're under a lot of pressure these days. but a lot of it is satellite fed. A lot of it is the same. A lot of it is just nationwide programming. We're local. We're very local. That doesn't mean you can't enjoy us in other parts of the world. A lot of people do. A lot of people listen from all over the place. But it's that homespun live radio thing that it's such a rare commodity these days.
There's actual people, you know, it's not like a playlist or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, there's people here operating the board that are, they're broadcasting live, they're playing music, they're talking about news on campus or in the local area out here.
Complaining about the equipment that doesn't work.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. Things that real people do. Talking about their humdrum lives and simply, I don't know, becoming familiar with the various things that are happening with each other. Sharing stories. That's what radio should be about, is sharing stories. And music is just another type of story. And it's all here, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You can support that. You can keep that going, because it really is a tenuous type of a thing. We're looking at all sorts of changes with equipment that needs to be replaced, facilities that are horribly outdated and need to be upgraded, all kinds of things, cuts in funding, threats from all sorts of government agencies or groups that don't like what you're doing. There's a lot of pressure, and that's why the support is so important. And your support by calling us, 631-632-9872, means so much. And a simple pledge of $25 makes a difference. That tells you where we are. And I think many other places where you listen and hear the proverbial pitch at various times, $25 isn't what they're after. They're after $250 or $2,500 or something like that, something more corporate, because they actually have to pay people to do this, to coordinate fundraisers, to run the radio station. And we don't do that. We don't do that. We're not getting anything except the enjoyment of being here, of programming, of sharing what we do and hearing from our listeners and hearing something back as far as saying, yes, I'll support that. I'll pledge whatever I can afford. That means so much. 631-632-9872. I got to say, no calls.
None.
I mean, this is a much smaller station than the other station, for sure. If I say, call up, the phones light up immediately over there, because New York City, 50,000 watts, it's a big difference. But we are on the internet. We are broadcasting to Long Island. And I know there are people out there, because we hear from them at all other times. Go ahead, Kyle. Make that phone ring. You can do it.
631-632-9872.
That's right.
That's 631-632-WUSB.
Yes.
Please call in and make a pledge today. We have a knit cap or scarf at the $25 level, a ceramic mug, a travel mug, military cap, baseball cap at $35 level. We've got t-shirts for $50 and a sweatshirt, a WUSB sweatshirt at the $75 level.
The phone's ringing. Run, Kyle. Run like the wind.
Running?
Yes.
Oh, no. Oh,
just pick up the phone. Don't press the button when you pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone. Otherwise, it hangs up. All right. I hope whoever is calling is really going to pledge and isn't just making Kyle run through the studio like a maniac, because that is funny and... Okay, he fell down, but he's picking himself up, and he's made it to the phone. All right, that's good. Now, okay, this is great. He's writing down some information. I assume it's not a message to somebody. Now it gets interesting. When he's done with this pledge, then we're going to hopefully get another pledge, and then I'll run out, take that call, and Kyle will be left in here all by himself. And we're going to have to hurry, because we're almost out of time. We only have 9 minutes left before the lacrosse game comes on. But that's the magic of live radio. Show me another radio station that does this kind of thing. Yeah, we're talking about corporate endowments and matching funds and things like that, and all those other professional fundraising stations. But we're here by ourselves, figuring it all out and adding whatever we can add to make things work. Speaking of NPR, you know, I was looking at various articles about this. Of course, they're under all kinds of pressure to not be so liberal, to not have the kinds of, I don't know what kind of programming they're so concerned with. Car talk, all things considered, is not liberal leaning as far as I'm concerned. I think it's just possible that more people who are left of center listen to this kind of thing or take an interest in world events. And somehow, in some crazy way, that's seen as being liberal. But as far as ideology being expressed, I just don't see it. You listen to Pacifica? Yes. Is ideology there? Definitely left of center. NPR? Not so much. I think it depends on where you put that line. But there was a blog today that was published on Forbes that showed, based on, get this, tweets, the Twitter network, the kinds of people that I believe followed NPR, who they followed, who followed them, and researchers were able to find a curve that matches voting records. And I don't know exactly how they did it. They followed a variety of individuals and brands in the media business. And the results were pretty much what you'd expect. Right-wing people on outlets like the Weekly Standard at one end, left-wingers like The Nation at the other, BBC News, C-SPAN near the center point. So where did NPR wind up? They wound up pretty close to the center, a little bit left of the center, a little bit left, but not very far left at all. Brian Williams of NBC was further to the left than NPR, as was Katie Couric. Yeah, it's really pretty funny. Now let's take a look at the right. Of course, all the way on the right, well, there's the Weekly Standard. There's Sean Hannity. There's the O'Reilly Factor, Ann Coulter. You know, Ann Coulter, she had a great quote. I can find this quote. This week, she was saying that radiation is actually good for you. Yeah, I couldn't make this up. Radiation is good for you. That is the actual quote, at least according to this headline. During a segment on Bill O'Reilly's Fox News show, the conservative firebrand tried to calm jittery viewers by telling them radiation is good for you. She went on to say a growing body of evidence shows exposure to radiation above levels the government deems harmful actually reduces cancer. You know, people make things like this up. They really do. There is no scientific evidence at all that radiation is the kind of radiation that is that comes from nuclear power plants. We're not talking about the kind of radiation that you might get as part of a treatment. Different, very different. You don't have to be a scientist to realize these things. But if people believe you, they'll say that's the truth. And if you don't believe them, then you're too far to the left or something like that. The line keeps getting moved in all different directions. It's a question of who you believe and who you consider to be legitimate. Anyway, continuing with this list, the Drudge Report, bit to the right there, quite a bit to the right. Washington Times, Kelsey Grammer, Toby Keith, yeah. And then we get to the center, and then the center you have National Journal, U.S. News, PGA Tour. Who cares what the PGA Tour thinks about politics? BBC News, some kind of soccer magazine, C-SPAN, Jay Leno. Joe NBC, whatever that is, USA Today, Regis and Kelly, The Early Show, Politico, NBC, and then a little bit to the left of NBC is 60 Minutes, if you can believe that. And then a little bit to the left of that is NPR. A little bit to the left of 60 Minutes. I don't think I've ever heard anybody accuse 60 Minutes of being leftist. And I can't believe I'm actually standing here. I am standing. Defending NPR based on the results of Twitter research. Well, you know what? I think I see what Kyle's doing in there. He's making that pledge take as long as he possibly can so that he doesn't have to come back in here and get stuck on the radio when I have to take a pledge. That's what he's doing. Very clever, Kyle. Very clever. You win this round, but we're on again next week. And next week is a full hour. And we'll settle this. Okay, you can still call, and there's a possibility I'll pick up. Because there aren't any other people here that will pick up. 631-632-9872. We have to go out. I'm going to say goodnight for Kyle, who's busy taking this pledge. And thank you to the person who called in with the pledge. Please make your call to 631-632-9872 even after we go off the air. And we'll be happy to take that information as well, give you the premium of your choice. And yes, you know, I do this every time our country bombs another country. I play War Pigs by Black Sabbath. And people say, Emmanuel, why do you play that song so much? I play the song so much because we do it so much, okay? If you have a problem with me playing the song, why don't you call your government and say, stop bombing other countries, and Emmanuel will stop playing the song so much? You know? That's a lot easier than getting me to play something else. All right, Kyle's off the phone now as we're playing the final the final moments of the program. We'll be back next week with another edition of Off the Wall. And I think he's running in here to say goodnight with about 10 seconds left before the vocals come in. Say goodnight, Kyle, because the vocals are about to come in.
Oh, good night, everyone. And I'd like to thank Madjo from the Netherlands.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And we'll be seeing you next week. 631-632-9872.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Stony Brook Seawolves Lacrosse. Tonight, Laval Stadium, the site of Stony Brook Men's Lacrosse. It's the number 10 Cornell versus number 12 Stony Brook. And with all the action, Matt Mankiewicz and Frank Borelli. Take it away, guys.
Laval Stadium on campus of Stony Brook University. Welcome to Stony Brook Seawolves Lacrosse. Tonight, it will be the Stony Brook Seawolves, who are ranked either 12 or 10, depending on which poll you're looking at, and versus the number 10 or number 7, Cornell Big Red. I'm Matt Mankiewicz. I'm joined tonight by Frank Barilli here in the broadcast booth. And Frank, this is a team that, of course, Stony Brook has not beaten before. It has a long history, although there haven't been that many meetings. One most significant meeting is, of course, the 2002 NCAA tournament, and that was a learning experience for the Seawolves. It was their very first tournament appearance, but a very close one last year, and that is the game that Stony Brook fans remember, and that is the game that Stony Brook Seawolves want to avenge.
Mm-hmm. That was a 12-10 loss last year, around this time of year, middle of March. Cornell was a good team last year. They had a lot of great players, graduated some great players, and Stony Brook gave them a good game, but lost here at home in a midweek game. This year, Cornell returns a lot of the same talent on the defensive side of the ball. Both teams are ranked in about the same spot where they were last year, and both teams have put together a decent season so far, but are vulnerable, which is to say, Cornell's lost to Army, Cornell has lost to Virginia, Stony Brook has lost to Virginia, and also to Towson. So both teams beatable. There's film out there at this midway point in the season where teams can watch how to beat another team, and where they excel and where they're not doing so well at this juncture. So I expect a good game, be evenly matched, and not really knowing what to expect. It's a midweek game. Sometimes on a Tuesday night game, you only have a day or two rest and a day or two prepare. So a lot of variables in this midweek game.
And absolutely. The Seawolves will, of course, come ultra-prepared for this one, as we said. They are coming off the loss to Towson, which was a big upset for Towson, and a big upset for Stony Brook, too, because it dropped them down significantly in the rankings. They were ranked fifth last week. Now they dropped down to number 12 and number 10, again, depending on which poll you're looking at. But regardless, this is not it was not a weekend that Stony Brook was happy with. Neither was Coach Rick Sowell. We'll talk to him in just a moment. But right now, the players are just about to get set up for the national anthem here as the Cornell Big Red in the away red. And it's very interesting because you take a look at the uniforms of both schools and they are so similar. The road uniforms of Stony Brook almost look exactly identical to Cornell, but the one distinctive factor that Cornell has is the big C, which is below the number on the back. So that will help us, I think.
Mm-hmm. Also, Cornell has that black shadowing around its numbers, which is great because it makes it easy to read the numbers, especially if you're calling the game from up here in the booth.
Absolutely. Now, as far as the Seawolves are concerned, they're in the snowball uniforms. And there's always an occasion to bring out one color scheme or the other, all red or all white or the combination thereof. But this time it's all white with the white helmets, the white shorts, and the white jerseys. So the Seawolves have come to play for this big one here at Laval. And hopefully you're here too listening on the radio, or if you're not, on WUSB.FM, and we're happy to have you. And it's always a pleasure to bring these games to you. The huddles, they haven't quite broken up just yet, so they're going to warm up just a bit more because mm-hmm. we're still some time away. But now's a good time, I think, maybe to let's see what Rick Sowell had to say about this matchup between the Stony Brook Seawolves and the Cornell Big Red.
You're with head men's lacrosse coach Rick Sowell just before the matchup between Stony Brook and Cornell, and this is a game that a lot of people had circled on their schedules. I'm sure you guys did too.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the next game, and coming off Saturday's performance, we're just looking to play better lacrosse, and hopefully that's going to result in a better result.
But the one thing about this team, though, even though you guys have never beaten Cornell before, this team is probably better equipped to do with it than it's ever been.
I hope so. I mean, we certainly have all the ingredients. And that's, taking better care of the ball, better decisions, and also we have to execute a lot better.
I'm sure the film on
the opponents, but is that the type of game that you build on, or do you just throw away?
Well, we got to build on it because it certainly was, we haven't been playing great, and it finally caught up to us, and so hopefully it's something that... again, we're trying, we're focusing, we're practicing well, we're doing all the things that you need to do. It really is, when the lights, camera, and action roll, we just have to perform better.
A couple of guys that,
that obviously are topics of conversation because of their health. Tom Competello, back, you know, in the lineup for the last few weeks. How's he doing right now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's healthy. I mean, he's you know, he feels great, and you know, we've been practicing enough that, you know, we're hoping that it's just a matter of time before he clicks into the old Tom Competello of certainly a year ago, and you know, we see a lot of signs that indicate that you know, it's just a matter of time before he gets back to playing to that level again, as I said, of a year ago.
How's Brian Reiner doing?
Reiner's a couple weeks away. You know, we're encouraged that you know, we are going to get him back, probably 2 weeks and somewhere in there. But we're excited to get Jack Vivziak back into the lineup. He's a freshman that we're going to see you're going to see an awful lot of him tonight, and we're excited to have him out there.
Everybody else good health wise?
Everybody else is healthy.
Good luck, Coach.
All right, thanks.
And, of course, that was Rick Soule, the head coach of the Stony Brook Seawolves men's lacrosse team.
The Flyers line of Danny Briere, Scott Hart.
And Danny Briere did a pretty good job the other night, too. But that's another story. NHL is something we can talk about later. But right now, it's time for the national anthem here at Laval Stadium. As the teams get back onto the field, Matt Mankiewicz and Frank Barilli bring you all the action between the Stony Brook Seawolves. And we will announce tonight's starters as well. First of all, for the Cornell Big Red, Frank.
Starting for the Big Red right now on attack, we've got Rob Pennell, the local junior for the County River 3. He's also going to be out there with Dave Powell and Steve Mock.
On midfield, Kyle Uranowski, Mitch McMichael, and Tom Trazzolini, another local product from Lafayette, New York, that is local to Cornell. On defensive side, Mike Bronzino, Max Feely, and Jason Noble. And in the goal, A.J. Fiore. Onto the Stony Brook side?
Absolutely. And, of course, you have the usual suspects. You're not going to see too many surprises here. From New Westminster, British Columbia, number 11, Jordan McBride, will be on attack. Joining him, of course, will be Kyle Belton. And also, at attack, Tom Competello. No surprises there. Your midfielder starting for today will be number 5, Russ Bonanno. And he has really broken into the lineup and gotten a lot of playing time. Timmy Trenkel and Kevin Crowley round out your first midfield line. The surprise, though, is freshman Jack Rorizniak. He will be starting, as Coach Soule did mention. Kyle Moeller on D, and also Savon Green. And Rob Camposa is your goalie for tonight, as he usually is. So, as far as health is concerned, we did mention with Coach Soule that Brian Reiner is still out. That is a very important factor, as you've been mentioning all along. He brings a lot to the table defensively, and the Seawolves do miss him. Now, also, Tom Competello is starting, and he's been playing major minutes, and he's been working his way in. Had a nice connection with Jordan McBride in the Towson game, but has not really been himself just yet, not consistently at the very least.
That's right. They're not getting the production out of him that they got last year and the year before. Probably has to do that he was violently ill just a couple of weeks ago, and now he's kind of getting back into the mix. Also, Russ Bonanno, who is a midfielder and has played attack in his past, has been taking the ball around to X for an invert quite often, almost every time he gets the ball. So he plays like an X attackman. That's probably taking some touches away from Tom Competello. And in fact, that was key at the Virginia game when Competello was out, and Russ Bonanno and Brett Drost the senior from Shoreham Wading River, had to fill in back there behind the cage.
Well, the one thing we also notice is that when Capitello doesn't have the ball, Jordan McBride doesn't always get it as much as he usually does. And McBride, the story about McBride has always been much better two-way player in his senior year than he was in his freshman year. Mm-hmm. He is a quick stick specialist when he's scoring, but he's excellent at setting screens and opening up opportunities for his midfielders when he's not.
Mm-hmm. And there really isn't anything you can take away from Jordan McBride. He was an All-America as a freshman, as a sophomore, as a junior, and probably will be again. He's going to be a four-time All-America, which is a very rare event in Division I lacrosse these days, and in fact has never happened at Stony Brook. In fact, he was the first ever All-America selection at Stony Brook to get it more than once, because every other selection we've had has been one and done. So can't take much away from Jordan McBride. He's piled up goals. He's on the scoring charts and will be there for probably decades to come, if not more. And, you know, that's why he's a team captain. He's out there starting tonight and has started every game since his set foot here on campus his freshman year.
So the teams have taken the field, and they will be taking their positions. And taking their positions to start will be the faceoff men. And that will be on the Cornell side, Mitch McMichael, and no surprise, on the Stony Brook side, it's Adam Rand. Crowley and Campbell are working the wings for the Stony Brook Seawolves. Noble and number 33 on the Cornell side, Max Feely. And this one is actually going to be a clean win for the Big Red. So first possession goes their way. The Big Red, of course, wearing the Big Red, the Road Red, and very similar to Stony Brook uniforms except for that big C on the back. And they are underway. They brought it back out into their own territory, and Mike Bronzino got a touch, and now they've actually thrown it away. The ball is actually knocked loose. Cornell does recover, however. And let's see who came up with that one. And that was Kyle Iwanowski, and he will bring it in to the midfield area. And now they get into the hands of the short sticks, and we get to see David Lau get a touch for the first time in the game, and he will pass it back to number 28 on the Cornell side, Mike O'Neill. O'Neill will hand it back to Jack Dudley, and Dudley will bring it into the box and bring it around to Pennell, and they'll work their way around the Cornell Big Red to the far side. Just underway here, Stony Brook Seawolves and Cornell Big Red. Getting a touch now is number 48, Roy Lang, and Lang will take it up to the right side and be pushed out to the side by Laferrette. Now back to Pennell. Pennell is behind the net in the corner trying to work his way around Muller, and you know Muller is going to get the best player, and he takes the ball away. He knocks it loose. Ball will trickle out of bounds. And it was last touched, of course, by Pennell, so it'll be Stony Brook ball. So on the takeaway, Stony Brook gets their first possession.
You can hear the crowd likes it. Kyle Meller has been a takeaway artist multiple times per game all season in only his first season in the Scarlet and Gray for Stony Brook. And Pennell, who's a front runner every year for the Twarton Award or the NCAA Player of the Year, just got robbed by Kyle Meller. So great takeaway by him. He boxed out Pennell down to the goal line to get the ball back. And that's going to be a matchup to watch all night. I think the fans know it, and everyone else is going to be watching.
So the referees are ready to signal live action here as the ball will be brought in from out of bounds and the Seawolves in their own territory. And a little bit of a stall going on here. The clock, of course, stuck at 13:46, no score. And I guess they're trying to figure out who's going to bring it in. I don't think it's a Stony Brook thing. I think the referee's just holding things up a little bit. Savon Green is out in the far corner of the Stony Brook box, and he's got the ball. So he's waiting for live action, and we are ready to... Not yet.
So to mention the matchups, actually, Savon Green will be on Cody Bremer, the freshman attackman from Victoria, British Columbia, and Jack Verizniak, the freshman from England, will be covering Steve Mock tonight on attack. So those are the matchups we've seen on the Stony Brook defensive side of the ball. On the Cornell defensive side, haven't seen a Stony Brook possession yet, but when they do, we'll let you know who the matchups are.
And now the Stony Brook possession is underway as Savon Green will take it along the far sideline into neutral territory. Has to dodge to his right and get right to the middle circle on the women's circle and now go diagonally all the way into the Cornell box. With the long stick, he still has the ball, and he still maintained, actually lost control of the ball, but the loose ball is picked up by McBride just in front of the Cornell bench. McBride, under pressure, has to bounce it to Timmy Trankel. Trankel, looking for something in transition, finds Campbell over on the right side, but Cornell gets back to Deke too quickly, and Campbell a little bit of trouble handling the ball too. Off the pick set by Belton, he will curl around to the far side of the crease. Doesn't have a shot. He'll bring it back to the left elbow. That's Bonanno. Bonanno will now go up the left wing and
flip it over to Capitello back of the X. Now back to Bonanno on the far side again. 12:36 left in the first. Still no score. Only the first possession for the Seawolves. Kevin Crowley with his first touch of the day. He will come to the left elbow, and he'll be looking to penetrate. He'll come to the goal line extended. Passes it back to Trenkel, but it was behind him, and the ball is going to wind up back on the other side of the midfield line, still being fought for and picked up by Cornell, and taking a shot and scoring on the one-on-one is David Lau. Cornell is on the board on the missed pass by Kevin Crowley, of all people. 1-0 Cornell.
So a bad turnover for Stony Brook goes the other way, and one of the dangerous parts about throwing away a bad pass backwards is that that ball rolls the other way and can cause a fast break going the other direction. 4-on-3, 5-on-3, 5-on-4 and David Ladd was there to pick up the ball and beat Camposa one-on-one. So Cornell goes up 1-0. If you remember the Virginia game a few weeks ago, they lost by one, and there was a garbage goal, or you could say it was more of a thrown-away pass that scored on a loose ball and cost them the game.
Exactly like this.
So far.
Yes. 12:15 left, and we will get down to midfield for the face-off. And once again, the usual suspects. It will be McMichael and Rand, and they'll go shoulder-to-shoulder as the ball trickles out, and it will come back Cornell's way. Second straight face-off they've won. And it was McMichael who actually came up with the ball. McMichael throws the ball away, the Fogo man. He tried to find Lau on the left side. It's going to go out of bounds, and it'll be Stony Brook ball. So the Seawolves catch a break there as the Fogo has a little bit of trouble getting set up there.
11:58 left in the first quarter, 1-0 Cornell already. And that's going to be Savon Green taking the ball down in the back right corner for the Stony Brook defense.
And he will give it to Camposa, and Camposa will come to the top of the box and look for an outlet, find it in Green, right in front of the Stony Brook bench on the near side. He sees a double team, and he gets it over to Campbell. Campbell will take it over the midfield line, right by the Stony Brook logo, and right outside the box, he'll come to the right elbow and step in and look to penetrate. He's curling. He'll go goal line extended. He'll bounce the pass over to Capitello over on the near side. Capitello not in his usual position, and he gets the ball taken away. And a great takeaway by the Cornell defender, and that is number 31 on the Cornell squad, Mike Bronzino. He will take it into Stony Brook territory and hand it off to Pinnell on the near side. Pinnell will hug the end line, guarded by Muller. Muller trying to take it away from him as he gets right at the X, just outside the crease, now to the near side of the crease. Comes back to the slot, goes to his right, sweeping shot and a score taken by Roy Lang, the midfielder junior. And Cornell is up 2-0, and what a beautiful shot there, a low one and a laser.
And that's Rob Pinnell getting the assist. He took Kyle Miller to X, drove around the right side of the cage, and hit a beautiful cross-cage feed. And that's where Lang was for an 8-yard shot. Nobody slid quickly to Lang. I think they were kind of sloughing off of him, and he was able to get a couple of jump steps before he took that shot off. So he had time to really set his feet and put some velocity on that one. 2-0 Cornell, 11 minutes left in the first quarter. And that's going to be a procedural call on the faceoff against Cornell going Stony Brook's way.
So Vonzell LaGaul will get things going and flip it to Jordan McBride. McBride will take a laser of a shot, but wide right. So this time we have somebody behind the net. It's Tom Capitello, and that's a very important point because that burned the Seawolves the last couple of games. Didn't hurt them against St. John's, did against Towson.
So I think it's going to be imperative for Stony Brook to get a possession here and eat a couple of minutes up because they've already gone in the hole 2-0.
Now we have Belton on the near side. He'll bring it back to Capitello at the X. Capitello will curl out to the goal line extended far side and come around to the left elbow and find Bonanno. Bonanno will go crossfield to Crowley. Now back to Bonanno just outside the box. He's going right down the slot. Quick flip over to Crowley. Crowley dodges, fires, and the shot is compromised as the loose ball comes back Capitello's way. Capitello back to the top to Trenkel. Trenkel fakes once, fires, and misses wide left. And this time the Seawolves do not have a man back there. Actually, a man out of bounds. So it will be Cornell ball off the shot, and Cornell will be looking to clear. And that, of course, is number 19 on the Cornell squad. That is Joe Pauletta, and Pauletta will get over the midfield line and step in the box and complete the clear for Cornell. And Cornell, of course, very successful on clears, but the Seawolves are pretty good with clears as well. So that's pretty much dead even between these two. Number 25, J.J. Gilbane, getting a touch. Now he will hand it off to Chris Langton as we see a new look on midfield for the Big Red. Over on the far side, that is Stephen Mock, Mock will pass over to Langton. Langton is in neutral territory. He'll come to the near wing area, try to get around Legall, and does help D provided by the Seawolves, and that was actually Crowley helping out there as they get it around to the X. Now getting down low, this time Mock takes a shot, and point-blank save by Camposa. The Seawolves stop it this time. Now coming back the other way, the Seawolves will be looking to clear, and doing so will be Rizniak. He gets his first touch of the day. He'll get it to Belton. Now over to McBride on the far side. 9:07 left in the first. It's 2-0 Big Red. The Seawolves looking for their first goal and looking for a really more of a set play, because these have been on broken-up transition plays for the Big Red. Quick dodge by Campbell. Passes over to Trenkle, now takes it back. Now he's looking to penetrate, going down into the slot, and he will be pushed out by a double team. Now he'll go to the right side as he tries to get the Cornell pressure off him. He gets it over to Belton on the near side and around the X to Competello. Back over to McBride, over on the far side. Now again in neutral territory, Bonanno, and back out to Campbell again, and he's going for it. Campbell gets the ball knocked loose, and now the ball is fought for. He falls on it, gets a stick lodged on it, and now it's lost. It was taken briefly by Thomas Keith of Cornell, and a hit on the play as Bonanno threw a hit on it. The ball does go out of bounds. This one's going to go Stony Brook way, right in front of the Cornell bench.
Violent hit on Russ Bonanno. He took one high to the shoulder and popped down, but apparently it was a clean hit from the front side, and there was no call. So even though Stony Brook picked up the ball, Cornell bench is rowdy right now over the hit right in front of their bench, and a timeout is taken by Stony Brook. Probably a good idea with 8:13 left in the first quarter and down 2-0.
Well, they haven't been able to get a solid offensive sequence going.
The offense has been sloppy so far.
Yeah, and part of it has been the Cornell pressure, the Cornell forcing turnovers, and part of it is that Stony Brook has gotten themselves into some trouble, too, with a couple of missed passes. And this is not a team that they should be getting overly nervous over.
Yeah.
They actually were outranking them all the way through the year, and they're still pretty close in the rankings. So the rest of the country thinks these teams are pretty equal.
Yeah, and I have to say, if you're listening on your radio and you're not watching, Cornell is really dominating just about every aspect of this game. Stony Brook has done only a couple of things right. We saw a nice takeaway from Kyle Meller on Rod Pinnell, and Camposa made one really nice and tight save. Otherwise, Cornell's been beating them one-on-one. Stony Brook has not been taking care of the ball on offense. I think Cornell already has three caused turnovers, one with the short stick, no less, and a couple of big hits, and, of course, two goals. So Cornell dominating every aspect of the game right now. 8:13 left in the first quarter. It's 2-0 Cornell over Stony Brook here at Laval Stadium. And we're still in the first quarter. Stony Brook just used their first timeout, which was probably a well-used timeout considering the chip on their shoulder. Cornell has come out in this game. They look really savvy. They look really good swagger out there. And it is going to be Stony Brook ball as the usual suspects do come out to play some offense.
Yep, and no man-ups or anything like that. No flags on the play, so everybody's at even strength. As we get down to the 8:13 mark, we're ready to go here. It's going to be brought in by Belton over on the right elbow of the Cornell zone, and he will pass over to Bonanno, now over to the far side, and that is Robbie Campbell. He'll work off a pick set by Bonanno, and he'll go to the right side of the slot, draw the double team, get it over to Belton on the right side, and around the X to Competello. Competello, looking for McBride, finds him over on the far side, now back up to the top, and again to Bonanno. Bonanno dodging to his right, now he'll get it over on the right side to Belton once again, as the Seawolves are on the perimeter. Belton looking to invert off this pick set by Competello. He'll curl around to the far side, get it over to Campbell, now down low to Bonanno. Bonanno takes a shot, and this one, a beautiful save. No problem for the Cornell goalkeeper, and the Cornell Big Red will be looking to clear once again.
The Bonanno shot went right into Fiore's stick, so that is an easy save, and it's going Cornell's way. Fortunately, great defense by Timmy Trenkle holding Cornell out of the box, and they're going to get it in.
Yep, and it took him long enough, but Jack Dudley does complete the clear with Laferre on him. And they'll bring it around to Mock, and once again, that should be Pinnell, and behind the net, he always is, and he'll get it all back over to the right side of Cornell's, of the Stony Brook zone, to Dudley. Dudley gets it back over to Law, and actually it's Lau, and Lau will fire wide left, and he was very dangerous, of course, for the second Cornell goal, and he was just basically running in past everybody and got the shot off. Now coming back is Pinnell. Pinnell takes a shot. This bounce shot goes wide left, and the Cornell Big Red will get it back, as winning the race to the end line was Jack Dudley. He'll be brought back in by number six, Steve Mock. Mock, of course, is from Huntington, and there are a lot of Long Islanders on this Cornell team, as you would expect, and I'm sure there are a lot of their fans here as well, as Mock will get the pass off to Mike O'Neill. Mike O'Neill will come around to the left wing and bring it back out to Law, and we'll come around to the other side now, over to the far side, and that is number 22. As the ball gets knocked loose by Laverne. Beautiful, but picked up by Pinnell, taken away, and now Pinnell will roll out to the right side with Muller still on him and pass out to Lau. Lau looking to dodge over towards the slot, drawing a double team, finding a man down low, and a sweeping shot taken by O'Neill is wide left, and they'll come back to the Big Red again.
So Savon Green came off the crease for the slide. Maybe a second early, but he forced a bad shot. Now he's on the coverage. He's covering Lau down low.
As we see seven down there, and he'll come around to the top. And David Lau will be looking to shoot, get down low to Mock, and Mock will come up with the big goal for Cornell. It's 3-0, and the Seawolves, it's unfamiliar territory for them once again.
Well, for Savon Green, who was on the coverage, was doing a good job on Lau, but his stick snapped in half, and by rule, he had to run off the field. So Cornell sort of went man up there, and Lau just curled around the top and got a bounce shot off. So I feel bad for Stony Brook, but that is part of the game. You break a stick, you got to get off. 3-0 Cornell, 6 minutes left in the first quarter.
Mock was providing the screen on that one, so it didn't deflect off him. This one's going to be a clean win for the Seawolves on the faceoff. Rand, first thing he does is get it to McBride. McBride will curl around, come back down the slot. He's got to get rid of it, and now he loses it. The Cornell defense is absolutely awesome, but a nice hit thrown by Rand on the Cornell defender. That was Noble who took the hit, but the ball is still being fought for. White shirts all over the place. Noble gets a stick on it, and straight into the cross of a Cornell defender, and that is Jonathan Thompson. To go correction on that, that's Feely. Feely goes cross field to 31 Bronzino.